The following audio is from LCBC Church. To learn more about LCBC, visit lcbcchurch.com.
Well, we are so glad that you're here with us today for week three of our series called Mixtape. And if you're kind of dipping into this series for the very first time, you haven't been here in the last several weeks, let me just tell you what Mixtape is all about. What we've been doing over the last few weeks is actually kind of simple. All the communicators who have been up front, we've just been sharing our stories with you. Our stories about what our lives were like before Christ, how we came to know Jesus and trust Jesus, and then our lives since then. And the reason that we've been sharing our stories, it's kind of rooted in a conviction that we have here at our church, a sort of a fundamental belief that we have here at our church, and it's this. Every single person has a story. We all have a story. Doesn't matter how old you are, doesn't matter your background. God is actively writing a story in your life. And every now and then, it's just really good to pause and reflect on what God is doing. And I don't know about you, but when I think about my own life, when I begin to think about the story of my life, one of the things that helps me actually is to think back, is just to kind of go back to music. Because music just sums up, I can remember different seasons of my life through the music. And so over the last few weeks, all the communicators, we've just put together a mixtape of songs in our lives that take us back to seasons that have been meaningful. So I'm gonna share some of my mixtape with you here in just a few minutes. Because this is how it works for me. I mean, I can hear a song and instantly be transported back to a particular moment or season of my life. And then there's some songs, they just keep coming up again and again in my life. It's almost like they tie you back to your roots. And no matter when you hear it, you cannot help but feeling like you are home. And this is that song for me.
Turn it back there, Sean. We'll be right back. I've been here at LCBC for 19 years, and every day of those 19 years, I have waited for that moment right there. Woo! Man, there was smoke coming off that guitar. There was smoke coming off that piano. So in the words of Hank Williams Jr., I couldn't said any better. I was one of the chosen few to be born in Alabama. And when you are born in Alabama, there's only one pressing question that you must answer from the day that you take your very first breath. And it has to do with football. Alabama or Auburn? That's the only question that matters. Who will you pull for? And you don't really get to make that choice. That choice is made for you. It is handed down to you. And there's only one right choice. The University of Alabama Crimson Tide. Roll, Tide, roll. And guys, it runs deep. It runs deep in my family. And this is no joke. This is not a stretch at all. My grandma and my granddaddy, they had more pictures of Alabama's head coach, Bear Bryant, hanging up in their home than they had of our family. So you know what that means. You know during Christmas, I'm not getting what everybody else gets. This is the kind of presents that I'm getting here. And I'm decked out, man, in my Alabama gear. I'm ready to go play for Coach Bryant. And of course, like 2 seconds later, this is what happens. I take all that out on my little brother. I'm tackling him. I don't care how old. I don't care that he's just born. I'm just leveling that kid. My home in sweet home Alabama, it was a place of love. It was a place of acceptance. This is actually a picture of me with my brother and my sister. My brother and sister are twins, and John and Rachel. They're 2.5 years younger than me. I happened to weigh 11 pounds, 13 ounces when I was born. That's right. That's right. Some of you moms just groaned. And then my mom had twins. So yeah, she was done after that. I like to think, though, I played the role of John the Baptist, you know, like for my brothers. I prepared the way of their coming. I don't know if you ever do this or not. Do you ever look at an old picture, like, you know, the one I just saw, like an old picture, and you think about that moment in time that is captured, and you think about how innocent that season of your life was? Do you ever look at an old picture like that, and you just think about how simple life was at that moment? Before the hurts, before the wounds. I look at photos like that from that season, and I think about how safe I felt. And I look back on those seasons and those times, and I also just think about how simply I thought about God. Before doubts, before hurts, before struggles. My dad was a pastor, and so I was in church quite a bit. And I remember being 7 years old, and I went down front one night at church. You're like, night at church? Absolutely. Wednesday night, Sunday morning, we were there. And one night I went down front and I kneeled at the pew in the very front of the church. And I remember my dad coming up to me, and I can still see it in my head right now. I remember him coming up to me, and I felt a hand on my shoulder, and I looked up and it was my dad. And he just said, "Jason, why did you come down here to pray?" And I looked at him and I said about as confidently as a 7-year-old can say, "I'm gonna be a missionary. I wanna tell people about Jesus." That's what a missionary is. I just wanna tell people about Jesus. It just wasn't complicated. If Jesus wanted me to tell others about him, that's what I'm gonna do. I was gonna go do it. But life, little did I know it, was about to get a lot more complicated. 1987 was a big year for our family. It was a year of transition for us. My dad was invited to come and be the senior pastor at a church in North Carolina. And so we loaded up the U-Haul and we packed our young family in for our next adventure. And if you would have, you know, put my Sony Walkman on, remember those, right? And you would have put my mixtape in there, because I got my mixtape right here. And you would have loaded up that Sony Walkman. These are the kinds of songs that you would have heard playing on my mixtape. No, my parents did not know I was listening to this. No, we got fun and games. But it's so good. This may be the best song on the best album of the best band of all time. I'm just saying. I don't know how we listen to Michael Jackson from the 80s. without getting a little glove action here. Some of you have no clue what this is. Just Google it, please. Elementary, middle school skate parties. This was blasting. By the way, do you ever listen to a song and you go back and you read the lyrics now? That's one of them. You might not want to, I'm just saying. I remember 1987 being a season of life when the biggest worry in my life was what to wear to that school skating party. That's freedom, by the way. That's not stress. But for the first time in my life, I was about to experience something that would become a weight around my neck, something I'd never experienced before, something I'd never felt before. And it's a simple little word, but man, it is so impactful. It's the word shame. You know what shame is? It's that nagging sense that you are broken. That if people only knew that you are such a disappointment. And you know, no one ever chooses shame. It's not like you go out looking for it. It's just kind of thrown on you. And that heavy weight of shame was first thrown onto me by a man who was a part of our church. A man who took advantage of his authority in my life in the most evil of ways. A man who took advantage of my innocence and my genuine trust of others, especially adults. When we moved to North Carolina, we began, you know, quickly connecting with the people in our church. And there was this middle-aged man. He served in the church. He was a little bit awkward. He was kind of a loner. He didn't really have a ton of friends. He really didn't have any family. And so my family took him in. We shared meals with him. We invited him to share in our lives. And he took a particular interest in spending time with me. And obviously, as is true with all of life, hindsight is 20/20. But it's clear now that he was grooming me all that time for sexual abuse that would last until I was 14. I was 9 years old when he was first kind of came into our family's life for those 5 years. And my shame, man, my shame got on a megaphone. And it started screaming into my heart. And its message was really simple, and it was really clear. There were two lies that just lodged themselves down in my heart. God's disappointed in you, Jason. And I'm damaged. God's disappointed. And I'm damaged. You know, for those 5 years, I prayed almost every single Sunday. I remember like it was yesterday, man, being in church, sitting on the front row. And I remember praying almost every single Sunday that God would forgive me for what was happening. He's disappointed, Jason, and you're damaged. This is all your fault. God hates you for this. You're not strong enough to stop this. You're not brave enough to stop this. You're not smart enough to figure your way out of this. And when you think you're damaged, or you're lacking, or you're not enough, there tend to be two sort of instinctive reactions that we have whenever we think we're damaged. And the first reaction that we just sort of intuitively have is we try to fix ourselves. And how do we fix ourselves? When you think you're damaged, how do you fix yourself? Easy. You just prove to everyone else that you're not those things that your shame has told you you are. You work tirelessly to prove to everyone else around you that you're fine, to prove that you're strong, to prove that you're good enough, to prove that you're smart enough, you're pretty enough, you're strong enough. And you start living for the approval of others because you look to them to tell you you're not damaged. But the other response, living right beside it when shame convinces us that we're damaged in some way, it's to hide. Don't let others see that side of us. Just hide. And some of us, we hide behind work. And some of us hide behind lies, and some of us hide behind smiles, some of us hide behind success, but underneath it all, if we were to get real, there is a nagging sense that we cannot let the secret of who we are out, that we struggle, that we've been hurt, that we're scared, that we cannot do it all. And guys, let me just tell you, man, putting on a front to prove yourself and your worth to others, while at the same exact time hiding the messiest parts of yourself, that is a toxic combination. And I became an expert in that before I even became a teenager. An expert at doing whatever I needed to do to get others to approve of me while at the same time hiding those most vulnerable parts of myself. Why? Because I was convinced God's disappointed and I'm damaged. I came home one Sunday night and I told my mom that I didn't want to see that man again after 5 years of seeing him pretty much every week. And that raised some flags in her mind, obviously. And so she was so wise. I know God planted this idea in her mind, but she was so wise in suggesting that I go and write him a letter outlining and detailing why I didn't want to see him anymore. And so I did. I left it in my room, and then the next day, Monday, I went to school. It was January, and so it was basketball practice, and I had practice, you know, on that day. And usually my dad would pick me up by himself, but this day my mom and my dad both showed up to pick me up, which was a little bit odd. And then it got a little bit more odd because we just drove about a mile down the road. We pulled into the first empty parking lot that we could find. We pull in there. My dad puts the car in park, and then he turns to me, and he simply says this. He said, "Jason, we found that letter that you wrote. And we read it, and we believe you, and everything's going to be okay." And I've shared parts of this story with many of you before. If you've been a part of LCBC over the years, you may have heard me share some of this before. I've written about it. I mean, so it's not new for me to share this story. What I've never really talked about, I've never shared the ripple effects that it had on my family. I mean, this unlocked a flurry of events in our family's life. My mom felt, as you can imagine, my mom felt the weight of depression over how this could have happened. And her faith was on the ropes. My dad felt the waves of anger, understandably so, wash over him that planted deep roots of bitterness in his life that he wouldn't even fully realize until much later. And my brother and sister, they had to sit on the sidelines as my parents focused on me and helping me and our family find healing. And they were just kind of left to have to sort through everything alone. And although it would take years, every single one of them would see God's grace and love restore their hearts. But for me, man, that shame ran deep. God's disappointed. And you're damaged. We ended up pressing charges, and the man was arrested. And I remember walking into church that Sunday after he was arrested, knowing that now everything was public. I mean, everybody knew now. Everybody was talking. And I knew that everyone knew. And so I remember, I can feel it even right now. I can feel it inside of me, like walking into that church so anxious, feeling like every single eye was on me. What do they think of me? And I remember Mary Edwards. She was a middle-aged woman, and I remember her seeing me and across, you know, the lobby of the church, and her locking eyes with me, and she beelines it for me. She makes a straight line right for me. And when she gets to me, she just wraps me up in her arms and holds me and holds me and holds me. Holds me so tight, I thought I was going to pass out. Guys, listen, I think sometimes we way overcomplicate what we should do when people that we know are going through something painful. Mary Edwards just hugged me. And here I am talking about her 30 years later. It's not complicated. Just hug them. Just tell them you love them. Just let them know that you're never going to leave their side. But for every Mary Edwards we had in our life, there was also someone who just, they didn't know how to respond. We had people in our church blame my dad, ask for his resignation. I got a letter from a hero of mine. She wrote me a handwritten letter. She was a hero of mine. She had been a missionary overseas for years. I wanted to be like her when I grew up. And she wrote me a letter blaming me. We had people from our church testify on that man's behalf at his trial as character witnesses to try to help him get a lighter sentence. And every now and then, I'll share that part of the story, and people will ask me, they'll be like, "How did you not give up altogether on church or on God through all that?" Which is a fair question. But there were two convictions, these two convictions that I just always had, and I just held them pretty strongly. I don't know why, I don't know where they came from, but I just always had these two convictions that helped guide me through that season. And the first was this, is that you should never blame a group for something that an individual did. The church did not hurt me. That man hurt me. Christians did not hurt me. He did. And it's easy sometimes in the midst of, you know, those most painful moments to universalize a particular. But no, the company is not corrupt. That manager was. No, men are not all like that. Your dad was. No, women are not all like that. Your ex was. And I just refused to hold a group of people responsible for the actions of one individual. And I also just felt like it would be completely unjust to blame God for something that a man did to me. It almost makes light of what others do to us instead of giving them the dignity at the end of the day and really the full weight of responsibility to face their own actions when we just blame God for what other people do. I just want to encourage you, don't ever let someone off the hook by blaming God for what they did. And we didn't let him off the hook. He was sentenced to 20 years in prison. And we finally felt like we could start to turn a page from that season. And I began going to counseling that would last for a couple of years. And that counseling began to give me, you know, a way of putting voice to what had been going on inside of me. And as all of this came spilling out in the open, it became obvious to my family that we needed a change of scenery. We needed a fresh start. You ever felt that? You ever been in a season where you're just like, we just need to start it. We need a do-over. That's how it felt to us. And so about 2 days before my freshman year in high school, we moved to Louisville, Kentucky. And it was around this time that my parents actually, they gave me my first real Bible. Remember the ones they used to make that were the size of like a small SUV? The only pictures in it were the maps in the back. And this is it. This is the Bible they gave me. And they gave it to me because they knew something that I didn't fully understand at that time. They understood that the voice of shame was going to be loud and pervasive in my life. But they also knew that the only voice strong enough and powerful enough to cut through it was the voice of the one who made me. In love. And in the front of this Bible, in the very first kind of front flap, they wrote me a note. I got a note from my mom, a note from my dad, just expressing their own love for me, but most importantly, encouraging me to allow God's word to speak the final word over my life. And in the note that my dad wrote to me, he actually pointed me to a passage from the book of Isaiah. It's in the Old Testament. It's a passage in Isaiah 43 where God's heart is put on full display, man, for his people who have gone through the worst of circumstances. This is what it says in Isaiah 43:2. Do not be afraid, for I have ransomed you. You know what ransom means? It means I've paid a price for you. You're worthy. I will pay. I will do what it takes to buy you back. I've called you by name. You're mine. When you go through deep waters, not if, when, it's going to happen. When you go through deep waters, I'm right there, I'll be with you. When you go through rivers of difficulty, you will not drown. And when you walk through the fire of oppression, while I was walking through it, you will not be burned up. The flames will not consume you. And I read those words, and something about those words of God to his people were so compelling to me, so life-giving, and yet, at the exact same time, man, I found myself resistant to them. I heard the voice of my heavenly Father lovingly speaking truth into my life, but I didn't believe I was worthy of it. Because he's disappointed and I'm damaged. It's funny how shame does that, isn't it? It convinces us that we need to run away from and resist the very one that we're safest with. And that's what I did. My heart wandered far from home, far from God, the God who created me in love, from the very one who could heal me. And we were now in Louisville, Kentucky. I was going through high school. I ended up at the University of Louisville. And those years in Kentucky, in high school and then at the University of Louisville, they have a bit of a soundtrack of their own. And these are the songs that kind of just, they take me right back there to that season of my life. You're never going wrong with Foo Fighters, ever. Some of your heads nodding. Little Bush. I have no clue what a machine head is, but apparently Gavin Rossdale has one, so, and he wants us to know about it. You never thought you were going to hear Rage Against the Machine in church, did you? Someone went, oh no.
Don't cry for me.
No, I'm just kidding. I never listened to that. I just felt like I needed to throw some of you who needed a rock and roll break in there. You think I was listening to the Evita soundtrack? No. Oh, man. Here's what happened, though. While those songs are playing in the background of my life at that season, those years in high school and in my early years in college, man, I dove full steam ahead into that toxic combination, proving, hiding, prove yourself, hide the messiest parts of yourself. I was one way here and another way there. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like I played a part with this group of people, I played a completely different part here. I was a completely different person no matter what circumstances I was in. Guys, that's no way to live. That's miserable. You know what integrity means? Integrity just means, like at the most fundamental level, it just means to be the same person here or there. You're the same. So when you live a split life, it's actually sort of the technical definition of being disintegrated. That you are not the same because there are parts of you that are hidden. And I was disintegrating. And I had learned that a lot of alcohol and porn was a really effective combination to distract me from facing the wounds that come my way. And I came by it honest. I mean, that makes a lot of sense, right? Alcohol just completely numbs you. I don't have to take responsibility for my own decisions. I don't have to take responsibility for my life. I can just kind of numb out with alcohol. Porn makes total sense because sex had never been connected to intimacy in any way. Porn is ripe for that because porn is the cheapest imitation of anything that God designed with sex because you get the physical stuff without any of the connection. And so it just, now I was the one using people. And see, this is the irony. The irony is that oftentimes, you know, shame that was handed to us, I didn't choose the shame that was originally handed to me. I didn't choose that. But oftentimes what happens is because of that, it's compounded then by the choices we do make to keep hiding. In other words, we mask the shame that we were handed by making destructive choices, which lead to more shame, which leads us to more hiding. And before you know it, you're spiraling. And some of you, you may feel like that. You've been spiraling a little bit. Some of you know the feeling of living a disintegrated life. And that's not God's intent for you. And I was tired. I was so tired. I was exhausted from trying to prove and hide. And I remembered a song in that season. It was 1998. And there was a song that I grew up singing in church. It was a song that captured what my heart wanted most, but I didn't know if I would be able to have it.
Oh, victory in Jesus, my Savior forever. He saw me and bore me with his redeeming blood, and he loved.
those words came back to me. Victory in Jesus. Man, I wanted that. I was tired. He sought me. He was looking for me. He bought me. And in that season, I kept hearing this small, faint whisper of a voice. And it just kept saying, stop hiding, Jason. Come home. Stop hiding. Just come home. And one November night in 1998, I was done. I was absolutely done. And I walked up the stairs at my home, and I went to the top of the stairs. I took a left down the hallway. I went to the end of the hallway, took another left in my bedroom, and I shut the door behind me, and I sat on the edge of my bed, and I did not move for probably 2 hours. And I decided, the reason I didn't move is because I decided I wasn't leaving that room until I had made a decision one way or another. I am all in with Jesus or I am all out. And I was wrestling with God. And I was tired of hiding. I knew that. But I also knew that if I was all in, man, it would redirect my life a little bit. I knew that. I knew that there would be some things I had to walk away from. I knew that there would be some habits that I would need to surrender. I also knew at the same time, though, that none of those were fulfilling me. And I went back and forth and back and forth. And in the end, the words that Jesus spoke all those years ago that are recorded in Matthew, they won my heart over that night. Where Jesus said, come to me. Come to me, all of you who are weary, you're tired, you're exhausted from carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, my way. Let me teach you, because I'm humble and I am gentle at heart. And you will find rest for your souls. See, I had believed in Jesus for a long time. But Jesus didn't say to believe in me and I will give you rest. He said, come to me. Move towards me. Out of here, into here. To follow him and then allow him to teach you a new way of being. Jesus, what about my past though? I thought you were disappointed. What about the things that happened to me? What about all the things I've hidden? What about all the people I've used? What about all the things I've chosen? What about the choices I made to walk away from you, God? What about all the doubts I've had and that I still kind of have about you? And the voice of Jesus cut through it all and still says, come to me with it. Bring it to me. I can handle it. Come to me. And I didn't know what it would all mean that night. I didn't understand everything. I still had my hangups. I certainly still had my struggles. But I got up from that bed that night fundamentally different. At peace, at rest, because I knew something. I knew something. And not like you know something when you put it under the microscope, but the way that you know the ocean is strong, not because you read about it, because you got tossed around in its waves, that kind of knowing. I knew something. I experienced it. I knew that I had nothing left to prove anymore. Why? Because everything that matters most about me was already settled on the cross. And I knew that the shame that was handed to me by the things that a man did to me and the shame that came my way because of my own destructive choices, that was swallowed up now in the grace of God. And I knew that my past would no longer define me and my future was filled with purpose from that day forward. And I knew I wouldn't have to hide anymore. Because the creator of my soul was gentle beyond measure and would never reject me.
that he would only ever invite me to come to him. And I did that night. I chose to follow Jesus. And it's like my heart in that moment was suddenly opened to seeing something that had actually been true all along, but I just hadn't seen it until that moment.
I have never walked alone. You were with me through it all. Broken hearts and broken bones. You have always held me close. There's no place that I could go. Heaven's high or hell below. I have lived enough to know. Anywhere with you is home.
Broken hearts, broken bones. You've always held me close. And anywhere with you is home. See, the home I needed most, it wasn't found in a state down south. The home I needed most would never be built by human hands. The home I needed most wasn't found in my parents or my family. It was so much more beautiful than that. It was time to make my home in Christ. To come out of my hiding with all my faults and all my hurt and all my sins, and to bring all of me and all my brokenness to the only one who could handle me with care and put me back together again. It was time to make my home in Christ. I've had this nagging thought a few times over the last few weeks getting ready for today, and it's this. Why are you going to share these details with all these people? But I know why. It's because some of you, you're carrying around bucket loads of shame right now. And I know because I could sit here right now for the next couple of hours and I could tell you story after story after story of people who have come to me over the years and they have told me their story about how they thought they disappointed God, how they thought they were damaged, and after they shared their story with me, said this, "You're the first person I've ever shared that with." And that breaks my heart, man. And I realize that for many of you, the circumstances of your life, the shame that sometimes drives you to trying to prove yourself and hide, I realize that for many of you, they aren't anywhere close to the things that I've shared and I've experienced, but it doesn't matter. The source of our shame, its effects are the same in all of our lives. It leads us to hiding. And I just want you to know today that God is not disappointed in you. You are not damaged. And your future can be filled with joy and purpose. And it starts with a choice. The choice to come home to the one you can't hide from anyways. To come home to the one who is always gentle, the only one who can teach you a new way to live that will lead to life, the only one that can always be trusted to be completely and utterly vulnerable with. The one who understands your fears and your struggles and your doubts and your lies and your anxiety and your hurt and your pain, who looks at all the ugliest, messiest parts of your life and still says, "I love all of it. Now come to me and let me give you rest." Sometimes you hear a song that just perfectly captures the story of your life. And a few years ago, I was on a run and this song popped up in my playlist. It just moved me so deeply. I had to stop running. I was like ugly crying on the trail. I was that weird guy. But it just captured so much of what I've tasted and seen in my life, of God's goodness And it just reminded me of God's heart for me. But not just God's heart for me, but God's heart for you as well. No matter who you are, no matter where you've been, no matter what you've experienced, no matter what you've done, no matter what shape your shame takes, it's the voice of your heavenly Father who will not stop whispering, "Come home. I'm not disappointed, and you're not damaged. So come home."
Come out of hiding, you're safe here with me. There's no need to cover what I already see. You've got your reasons, but I hold your peace. You've been on lockdown, but I hold the key. 'Cause I loved you before you knew it was love, and I saw it all, so I chose the cross. And you were the one that I was thinking of when I rose from the grave. Now rid of the shackles, my victory's yours. I tore the veil for you to come close. There's no reason to stand at a distance anymore. You're not far from home, and I'll be your lighthouse when you're lost at sea. And I will illuminate everything. No need to be frightened by intimacy. Just throw off your fear and come running to me. Oh, yes, I loved you before you knew it was love, and I saw it all, still I chose the cross. You were the one that I was thinking of when I rose from the grave. Now rid of the shackles, my victory's yours. I tore the veil for you to come close. There's no reason to stand at a distance anymore. You're not far from home. You're not far from home. Come to me. And oh, as you run, what hindered love will only become part of the story. And oh, as you run, what hindered love will only become part of the story. And oh, as you run, what hindered love will only become part of the story. Love will only become part of
God is not disappointed in you, and you are not damaged. And as far as you run, he will never, ever stop running after you, simply inviting you to come home. He loves you too much for that. Guys, we all have a story, and the details of your story are very different than mine. But God is writing a story in each of our lives. And it's powerful to just share those stories. And so this week, who could you share your story with? Even if you're not sure where God is taking it yet, that's fine. It doesn't have to be a finished story to share it. But he's writing a story in our lives. And I realize that today could have dredged up some things for some of you. And if you're feeling there are some things that you're ready to bring out of hiding or maybe process a little bit more, man, our church has partnered with exceptional counselors throughout the state. And if you just reach out to our church, we can provide direction on where to start. We would love to come alongside you in that way. And if you want to pray with anyone about anything today, up to our front left, if you're in one of our buildings, in one of our rooms, we have people who would love to have the privilege to pray with you. And if you're online right now, then just stick around on the chat, and our hosts would love to have the privilege to pray with you. You know, the church should be the safest place to talk about these kinds of things, shouldn't it? The church should be the place where our vulnerability will only ever be met with love and compassion. And I am so, so grateful that this is true of our church. So LCBC, may the Lord bless and protect you, and may the Lord smile on you and be gracious to you, and may the Lord show you his favor and give you his peace. Love you, and we cannot wait to see you back next week.